Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Raging Bull Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On May 19, 2014, the Supreme Court issued its opinion in Petrella v. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. The question in this case, which concerns the copyright for a screenplay on which the movie Raging Bull was based, was whether the defense of latches, that is, that the other side delayed too long in bringing its claim, can be asserted to bar a copyright claim for damages falling within the 3-year statute of limitations prescribed by Congress. In an opinion delivered by Justice Ginsburg, the court held by a vote of 6-3 that latches cannot be invoked as a bar to Petrella's pursuit of a claim for damages falling within the Copyright Act's 3-year limitations period. However, in extraordinary circumstances, latches may, at the very outset of the litigation, curtail the equitable relief available to the plaintiff. In addition, latches may always come into play at the remedial stage when determining appropriate injunctive relief and assessing profits attributable to infringement. Justices Scalia, Thomas, Alito, Sotomayor, and Kagan join the opinion of the court. Justice Breyer filed a dissenting opinion, which the Chief Justice and Justice Kennedy joined. The decision of the Ninth Circuit was reversed and remanded for further proceedings. To discuss the case, we have Christina Mulligan, who is an assistant professor of law at the University of Georgia School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Mulligan.
In a previous podcast, we discussed the facts and oral argument of the Supreme Court case Petrella versus MGM. So now that the decision is out, it's worth looking at what the Supreme Court's decision says about the interaction between copyright and remedies law. So to recap the facts briefly, the question in Petrella is whether the doctrine of latches can bar a copyright suit for an infringement that occurred within the 3-year statute of limitations prescribed by the copyright statute. The plaintiff, Paula Petrella, acquired the renewal rights in one of her father's screenplays in 1991. She argues that MGM's film Raging Bull is based on that screenplay, and that the film's continued reproduction and distribution is a violation of her copyright interest in her father's screenplay. In 1998, 7 years after acquiring the renewal rights, her attorney corresponded with MGM about the matter to no resolution. It wasn't until January 2009 that Petrella filed a lawsuit against MGM, seeking damages for the past 3 years of alleged infringements and for other injunctive relief. MGM defended the lawsuit by arguing that the doctrine of latches should prevent Petrella's suit, even though her claims were brought between the statute of limitations, because 18 years had passed since the first time she could have brought the suit. Now, there are at least two perspectives from which one could look at this case. On the surface, it looks like it's primarily a question about civil procedure and remedies. When is the doctrine of latches available? When a statute specifies a statute of limitations? And indeed, the discussion of the case in both the majority and the dissent superficially read like they're solely about these procedural issues. However, the breakdown of the court reveals an additional frame from which we could look at the case. The majority opinion holds that latches are unavailable. It's written by Justice Ginsburg, joined by Justices Scalia, Thomas, Alito, Sotomayor, and Kagan. The dissent is written by Justice Breyer, joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kennedy. So one might look at this split and say, this is quite a surprise. When do we see Ginsburg and Breyer on opposite sides of the table? But in fact, the split is very common in copyright cases and is the same breakdown in terms of the authors that we saw in Eldridge versus Ashcroft and Golan versus Holder, where Justice Ginsburg wrote the majority opinion and Justice Breyer wrote the dissent or a dissent. Ginsburg tends to see the value in very robust copyright protections for creators, whereas Breyer is much more circumspect about the value of those increased protections when weighing them against the value of having works being more accessible to the public and to follow-on creators. These justices don't come at their views casually. Justice Ginsburg's daughter, Jane Ginsburg, is a copyright law professor at Columbia Law School, and both Justice and Professor Ginsburg tend to have fairly similar views about copyright law. Justice Breyer's tenure piece at Harvard Law School was an article called The Uneasy Case for Copyright in 1970, whose title reveals his perspective on copyright law quite clearly. So their views on copyright law are fairly long-standing and seriously considered, And that's why we see over and over again a split between Justice Ginsburg and Justice Breyer when copyright issues arise in the Supreme Court. So based on this alone, it's hardly surprising that Ginsburg's majority opinion holds that potential copyright owners have more leeway in terms of when to choose to exert their rights, and that Breyer worries about the negative effects this result can have on follow-on creators who use copyrighted works to create something else new. Nonetheless, despite the story about Ginsburg and Breyer's dispositions about the proper role of copyright law, we don't see those positions come out as explicitly in this case as we did in Elder v. Ashcroft or Golan v. Holder. Rather, both justices work through the procedural issues in the case, and it's only in their emphasis that their positions on copyright law really shine through. Ginsburg's majority takes the perspective of the plaintiff, Paula Petrella, and is much more sympathetic to her position than MGM's. While Petrella admitted that the reason for her delay in bringing the lawsuit was that Raging Bull had failed to make money previously, Ginsburg saw this delay as reasonable. After all, she wrote, litigation is expensive, and it might not be worth bringing a suit if damages are going to be low. Moreover, if MGM were very concerned that Petrella would someday come out of the woodwork, they could have sued her for declaratory judgment earlier. In contrast, Breyer sees this case from the perspective of MGM and sees the delay as deeply problematic. He quotes Justice Holmes writing in 1916, saying, it may well be, quote, inequitable for the owner of a copyright with full notice of an intended infringement to stand inactive while the proposed infringer spends large sums of money in its exploitation and to intervene only when his speculation has proved a success. So while Ginsburg sympathizes with the plaintiff, Breyer imagines a creator of a derivative work who believes no infringement is happening being surprised with a lawsuit years after a work has been released to the public continuously. Under the separate accrual rule in the Copyright Act, each new reproduction or distribution of a work will count as a new act of infringement, even if all of these actions revolve around the same course of conduct or nexus of activity. Implicitly, Breyer's resisting the wisdom of this statutory rule in cases where a series of infringements all harken back to the same mistaken belief that a work is not infringing or that a copyright owner is going to tolerate the infringement. Ginsburg goes on to suggest that the doctrine of estoppel is more appropriate than latches in these types of cases. The doctrine of estoppel would bar a lawsuit where a copyright owner made false representations that they were not going to sue an alleged infringer, and that infringer then relied on those statements to her detriment. Here again we see the difference in perspective between Ginsburg and Breyer. Ginsburg is okay with a result where the copyright owner's silence does not harm the copyright owner's legal rights, whereas Breyer's dissent worries that the delay will create a loss of evidence such that those misrepresentations that would give rise to a ruling under the doctrine of estoppel would become unavailable. Ginsburg simply doesn't think the loss of evidence is a significant issue and expects that it will cut both ways against both the plaintiff and defendant in most cases. The key move in the case that gets to the majority holding, however, is a very formal one. Justice Ginsburg writes that the equitable doctrine of latches implicitly is extinguished by the statute of limitations present in the Copyright Act, and notes that even though actions in law and equity were merged federally in 1938 into the civil action, latches shouldn't be available to bar equitable relief when a statute of limitations is present. Ginsburg decouples the doctrine of latches from the doctrine of equitable tolling, commonly discussed together, saying that while equitable tolling is a rule of statutory interpretation, the doctrine of latches developed in the absence of statutes of limitations and so couldn't be seen as an interpretive doctrine. Breyer just straight up disagrees with the interpretation that the Copyright Act statute of limitations was meant to extinguish the applicability of latches to copyright cases. He points to a Senate report in several cases in support of his position. Ginsburg cites several cases in support of her position. And we see your sort of typical battle of authority in unclear legal situations. So at the end of the day, the case is decided on very formal grounds. But the perspective of Ginsburg and Breyer also revealed that Petrella is a case about the relative power of the original copyright holder versus a follow-on innovator in the public. In light of that, it sits with Eldred and Golan as an example of the different philosophies of copyright law present on the court today.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.